Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to this week's episode of The Liberty. I'm your host, Caleb Franz. This is the voice of liberty for a new generation. I am thrilled to have you here this week. This week, we are getting into an interview. This is going to be actually the first interview that we've had of the new year for 2019. We've just had a lot to go over in those first few weeks. But it is good. I rather enjoy interview episodes because it gives me a chance to kind of take a breather during the episode every once in a while. And this week is no exception, especially for our guest this week. This week, I asked Brian Nichols of The Brian Nichols Show from the We Are Libertarians podcast network to come on the program. Now, I've been on his program a handful of times, a couple times. Actually, it was just last week or the week before I went on his program to talk about the reintegration project that Liberty, the Liberty Initiative is working on. So he's a great friend of mine, and he has a lot of similarities between myself and I. Kind of wanted to discuss about some of those similarities, some of the areas that we might have differences, not necessarily disagreements, but differences of perspective. I think is the best word, or best phrase to describe that. And we have a lot of fun. We talk about his interest in podcasting and how he became a podcaster and his perspective on Republican and Libertarian Party politics. So we have a really fun, really great episode for you. And I am very excited to present to you our episode with Brian Nichols of The Brian Nichols Show. Brian, welcome to Liberty. I am thrilled to have you on. This has been a long time coming, and I'm excited to talk to you.
Caleb, thank you so much, man, for having me on. After having you on my show a couple times, I was getting all amped up to come on Liberty. So thank you so much for having me on today.
Well, this should be a pretty fun episode. You were just telling me before we hopped on that you're all revved up and ready to go. So I'm looking forward to this.
The secret is pre-workout. See, I just came from the gym and I had two scoops of pre-workout versus one, because today is I don't follow the rules. I don't do the universal chest day on Mondays because every bench is absolutely taken. So I do back and biceps today, which I actually feel is a more intense workout for me, just saying. But gets me all jacked up, so you have me still in the pre-workout high, so I'm ready to rock and roll.
All right, well, I'm really excited about this episode because I see a lot of similarities between you and I, and the way that not just in political philosophy and sort of the way we look at the political world and our sort of actual philosophy as far as life and governance goes, but also our sort of parallels between our podcasting and how we sort of have tapped into that specific liberty-oriented audience in ways that I think a lot of other people sort of overlook, and we're trying to have those discussions. So I want to go over a lot of that in this episode. But first, I want you to please kindly give us a little bit of backstory. Give us a little bit of why you care about liberty so much, why you are so involved in these ideas and in these topics, and get us up to speed up to when you decide to start your podcast.
Absolutely. All right. So to rewind, I was a prototypical Bush Republican pretty much my entire life. So my family is very well established in Republican politics in Northern New York State. My dad is the elections commissioner for my home county on the Republican side. And prior to that, he actually was a 15-year legislature chairman for my home county. My grandfather's been the town supervisor basically for my entire lifetime, and he still is there today as the town supervisor as a Republican. So I grew up in this environment of politics, pretty much since the time I was born. I remember I was like 4 or 5 years old campaigning with my dad, and I thought that was the coolest thing in the world, going around knocking door to door and handing out literature and stuff like that. So it was exciting, and to be able to meet all these elected officials, for my local representatives, for not only the county legislature, but then assembly, senate. And then some of the more prominent, well-known names that a lot of people here will know, such as Rick Lazio ran against Hillary Clinton back in the year 2000. Hillary Clinton herself, I actually got to meet her back when she was my New York State senator.
I'm so sorry.
I know. And also her compadre there, Chuck Schumer, who was also my New York State senator. I got to meet him, former congressman, and then Secretary of the Army, John McHugh. Former governor of New York State, George Pataki, and not to just keep on listening who's who of New York State, but just growing up in this environment of meeting these elected officials and seeing the value that politics has in not only our day-to-day life, but also the way that it impacts our communities and our ability to grow beyond the confines of our home environment. So I'm from a very rural and I would say leaning on that more impoverished note in New York State. My home county is actually one of the most poverty-stricken counties in the entire state. And to see, we had all these grants coming up from Albany, New York, or coming from Washington, D.C. to try and make our community better. And I was thinking that was a great thing to see government trying to help fix areas. Now, that's prior to me going to college and, of course, being indoctrinated by my liberal professors. But that's not true. Actually, my political science professor I went to college, he is a diehard Democrat. And actually, his wife is one of the top ranking Democrats in New York State. But to actually find my views being challenged, where I'm thinking from a big government Bush Republican, from a big government Clinton Democrat, and hearing my ideas challenged from their ideas. And I kept on hearing basically it was the same perspective. It was just a different side of the coin. It was saying, well, let's just take more government, more money from the taxpayer and put it towards this program to make things better. And I was like, yeah, like, but at the same point in time, like, I know when you're doing it, it's wasteful. But what means my side, when we're doing it, it's not wasteful. And then I started to learn more about this guy named Ron Paul and, of course, his son Rand Paul. And I started to question more and more about this big government Republican Party that I've been a part of for a number of years. And, I will completely admit, and I say this as someone who's done a complete 180. Yes, I did support Mitt Romney back in 2012, and I regret it every single day. But at the very least, it opened my eyes to see how backwards the GOP really was in terms of reaching these new voters, but also really utilizing policies that are based on some rooted principle. In 2010, seeing the Tea Party, that was kind of the kick in the butt to say, well, maybe this big government idea isn't really a way to move forward in trying to actually enact new policy. So learning more and more about Ron Paul and Rand Paul, going to 2015, I was saying, you know what, I think we need to have one of these libertarians, as I came to learn that that's what they identified as, we need to have a libertarian be the Republican nominee. This is a great opportunity. So I really started pulling for Rand Paul during the primaries in 2015. And then, of course, the inevitable Trump tsunami happened, where he came in and just absolutely wiped out every single GOP candidate, from former U.S. senators to governors to congressmen and just everyone down the line, and took them out one by one. And I was really disheartened to see Rand Paul get absolutely trounced like he did. So then I started going more into the activist side, thinking like, what can I do now? What can I utilize to try and influence other people, or at the very least just to talk to other people? So I started to look for avenues, and I actually came across Austin Peterson. And at the time, he was pursuing his nomination for the Libertarian Party to be the 2016 nominee for the president. And with that, I actually came across his website, The Libertarian Republic, which I eventually started writing for and becoming an associate editor over at. And I've been doing that now for about 3 years, which is weird to even think that I've been there for 3 years now. But here we are in 2019 already. And with that, I was like, I love writing these articles, but there's something missing. I need to do something more. So I started thinking back to what's my really preferred medium. And it all came back to radio. Back in college, I was on a top 40 radio station as a DJ. And I absolutely loved that, to be able to talk to people and to, you know, throw a little humor here and there, keep things lighthearted, but at the same point in time, you know, be able to play the music people like to enjoy. And I was like, well, maybe I can use a medium like a radio show to promote politics and do it in a fun and engaging way. And this is really at the time when I became more more aware of podcasting. So I ended up asking Austin, hey, Austin, can I do my own show on your network? So he goes, go for it. So I started the Around the Republic podcast, which was a weekly summary podcast of the week's happenings in the news. So I did that for about a year. And I'd been speaking to Chris Spangle, who is the dear leader over at We Are Libertarians, which is one of the top libertarian podcasts in the nation. And talking to him, he's like, hey, listen, I love what you're doing. And I think there could be an opportunity to have you on my network and utilize the platform that I have, which is truly a podcasting platform. So with that, ended up talking to Chris and working some things out. And then starting back in January of 2018, I officially began the Brian Nichols Show and the We Are Libertarians Network. So the Brian Nichols Show it's kind of in the same vein as Around the Republic was, only instead of just doing a weekly covering of the news, I picked up on a segment I used to do, which was my summer interview series. And I found that people liked to hear different perspectives from people across the political atmosphere, and to have different perspectives given to challenge their own ideas, but then also to learn more. So I've really made the Brian Nichols Show in that same vein. So, for example, having you on to talk about Mill Liberty, but also, for example, the reintegration project here a couple weeks ago, having you on that and to be able to describe what you're doing to promote libertarian or just liberty ideals in real life that will actually help change people's lives and help maybe change people's idea of what libertarian is. Had people on like Adam Kokesh, who's running for president as essentially an anarchist. People like Jeffrey Tucker from AIER, Max Golker from AIER, Steve Horowitz. He's actually formerly from my neck of the woods as an economics professor, having him on my show to talk about minimum wage and trade. But then having people who aren't libertarians, I had a gentleman named Keith Rubino, who was running for New York State Assembly as a Democratic Socialist, and having him on my show and saying, all right, we agree almost on nothing, but let's try to find maybe not common ground on the ideas, but why we believe what we believe. We have good intentions. We just have different means of attaining those intentions, those goals. So to really have people on that challenge not only myself, but my audience. So we've been doing that now for just over a year. It's amazing to see the feedback we've been getting from the audience, more and more downloads every single week. So with that, I'm really excited to see here we are, 2019, we're getting ready to go into an election year, to see, the even more touches we're going to get from people. The guests we're going to be having on are going to be even better than before, which is no slight to my past guests, but it's amazing. We're already having these individuals who are running for president reaching out and saying, hey, you know, I'm interested in coming on your show. And obviously some are libertarian candidates, but also some folks within the greater political movements that are interested in coming on my show for other elected offices. So with that, we got a lot of fun things coming up here for the Brian Nichols Show. I'm excited just to see how we're having more influence in the movement, helping actually educate people on what it means to be a libertarian, but also to promote libertarian ideals in real life, actually have conversations that educate, enlighten, and inform people. So yeah, that's pretty much the long version of my transition from a Republican to a recovering Republican to a libertarian podcaster / activist.
So what I really like about this is how many areas of sort of overlap that I see between my own journey, not just, you know, in the realm of politics, but also in the realm of podcasting. Did you listen to radio a lot as when you were younger? I'm just curious, because that's sort of how I became interested in that. I know some people have a different route, but I'm just beyond the, like, everyone listens to music radio, you know, that's sort of a given, but
Talk
shows. Yeah.
Oh yeah. I mean, I grew up again, in a very political household, my dad always had on Talk 1400 or 92.7, which was our political talk station up in northern New York. So I always listened to folks like Mike Gallagher or Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity before he went full Trumpian, even some Michael Savage or Mark Levin. And then, yes, even folks like Glenn Beck, who I started to listen to more as I got into college. And then once I graduated college, especially during the election, Glenn Beck was my go-to podcast to listen to beyond the traditional medium of terrestrial radio.
So I'm really curious about your political journey. What was it that really connected with you as far as that issue or handful of issues that made you realize, well, maybe the Republicans aren't all that I thought they were, and started to realize that, you know, maybe I'm closer to a libertarian than I am a Republican.
So it was really two things. The first was in 2012 after the election there with Romney versus Obama, and hearing a lot of people that I respected, both within my collegiate ranks, but also folks who are political activists, you know, family friends, who they looked at Mitt Romney like, man, just not an inspiring candidate. He, you know, was very wishy-washy. And then talking about, you know, the GOP as a whole, saying, man, if only, you know, they had been more embracing of same-sex marriage, or only if they were more embracing of legalizing or decriminalizing marijuana, let's say, you know, maybe I'd consider them because I like their fiscal policy, but man, you know, I can't get on board with their social policy. And that made me start thinking about, well, maybe we need to like make this like new age Republican where, you know, it's fiscally responsible, but at the same point in time, socially accepting. And I was a big proponent of this new age Republicanism without even realizing that that was basically being a libertarian until 2014 when the GOP won the Senate. And I'm like, all right, here we go. We got our Republican Congress. We have our Republican Senate. Like, now we're actually going to see Republican limited government constitutional governance and policies and principles start to take action. And then what a letdown, because for a year and a half to 2 years, we just see more of the same, and it's excuse after excuse. And I remember, you know, one of the big arguments back with the Republicans versus Obama was the debt. And like, yeah, like we need to take care of this debt. And they're like, only if we have a Republican Congress, like we have to have House and Senate. It's like, all right, well, now we have it. Do something. Well, we need to have the presidency first. And I'm like, you guys are a bunch of wimps. Like, stand up and actually say what you believe. And then I came to realize that, well, they don't actually believe anything. Most of them, for the most part. I mean, there are exceptions to the rule. But unfortunately, a lot of the folks in elected office, they just say what they need to say to get elected. They have no real guiding principle unless that principle is, you know, bettering themselves, bettering their crony friends, and really embedding themselves into the political system for life. So that was the real like kick in the pants I needed to say, you know what, like screw this. These guys, they're a bunch of jokers by and large. And I think I need to start looking for people who are just actually saying what they believe, regardless of the little, you know, letter next to their name, whether it's an R, a D, or eventually things like a big L or a G or what have you for the third party that's available, and just start talking to these people and saying, what do you believe? Tell me why you believe it. Let's see if you actually have some principles that you're basing your philosophy on, or it's just, you know, whatever's the populist message of the day. So that was really the big kind of aha moment. And I would say I really started to openly identify as a small L libertarian, probably like end of 2014, beginning of 2015, somewhere in that time frame.
I seem to remember in 2012 when at the Republican National Convention, they had that giant debt clock. Do you remember that?
Yeah, that's right. I forgot about that. That was a huge deal then.
That was a massive deal, and that it got me really excited because I thought that, you know, it's basic like Clinton campaigning, you know, people care about the economy, so they're running on this, they're running on the debt and how everything is about, you know, liberating the market and making people freer to do what it is that they want to do with their money, and I thought that was going to be the big thing, and I was really excited about it, because first of all, you know, the national debt was like top two, maybe three issues to me personally that I deeply cared about, and I wanted addressed, and I saw so many candidates trying to address it and say, you know, Obama's raised the debt so much since entering the Oval Office that this has to be addressed. And I was really excited from a conversational standpoint about that. But then, you know, as politics inevitably just gets the best of all of them, none of them really meant any of that. They don't care about it now. They didn't care about it in 2012. Didn't care about in 2014, or probably the only time that there was a remote amount of individuals who actually cared about that issue itself was 2010. Yep. And most of those have either been corrupted or they have been voted out of office.
And really quick, you know, here's a fun fact about my home area. That's actually my home district is where the Tea Party started. So John McHugh, who was the U.S. congressman. I'm sorry to interrupt, but
John,
a fun
John
fact.
Who?
John McHugh. So he was
McHugh.
The
I thought you said McHugh, McCain yeah. at first, and I was like, wait a minute.
No. John McHugh. He was the congressional representative for, at the time, it was New York 23, and he had gotten appointed by Obama to be the new Secretary of the Army in 2009. Actually, end of 2008 into 2009. So it pushed a special election. And the election ended up being between a gentleman named Bill Owens, who ended up winning the election, spoiler alert, versus at the time she was one of the assembly leaders in New York State. And she was a Republican, but she was a very, very, very moderate kind of wishy-washy Republican. And a lot of people in the district, which my home area is a very rural, very, you know, staunch conservative district. And they're like, what the hell? Like, why are we running this wishy-washy person who's, if she gets elected as just, you know, the replacement for the outgoing Republican congressman, she's going to be one of those middle of the road, you know, Lindsey Graham or John McCain kind of Republicans. And she's just going to, you know, pussyfoot around until she finds one area she can take some GOP stance on. And otherwise she'll be, you know, a DF rating from the Cato Institute or Freedom Works or what have you.
Right.
So they said, you know what, screw this. And there was a big push by the Republican and conservative groups in Northern New York State to say, let's get somebody else in. So they recruited a gentleman named Doug Hoffman, and Doug Hoffman received the endorsement of the Conservative Party. And for New York State politics, because it is a, oh my goodness, I forget the name. There's a certain name for fusion voting. I think it is fusion voting state, where you can have multiple lines and you can get as many lines as you want, which makes you, it puts you on the ballot either way.
Oh, okay.
So he got the conservative line, and polling came out and he was actually ahead of the Republican candidate. And it kind of, you know, set off all these alarms from the GOP establishment. They started trying to squash it, and they're trying to squash it. Just got people more and more excited about this guy who's running as a conservative and actually standing up to the Republican establishment. So people started protesting and they would go outside. And that's really where the Tea Party, that real, you know, grassroots movement of saying, no, we're not going to take this, you know, this moderate run of the mill Republican. We want a conservative. And that's when really the Tea Party movement erupted. She technically dropped out, but she was still on the ballot. So when it came to the election, the conservative lost by just a under the margin of her votes that she received. So in an ironic twist, the Republican candidate actually pulled votes away from a third party candidate, and the third party candidate ended up losing to the Democrat because of the Republican candidate. So, yeah, that was really the start, if you will, of that Tea Party revolution. And that, yeah, like you said, that 2010 to, like, I'll say 2010 to like 2012, that was like the real Tea Party, you know, limited government, constitutional government revolution people were looking for. And obviously we see where we are today in 2019. Didn't really stick around too long.
Yeah, so let's talk about that for a second, and then I kind of want to shift into Libertarian Party politics, because, you know, obviously we both have some opinions about that. What is it that you think that made not the people in Congress, or not the people in power, but the base? Where is it, do you think, that they sort of made their misstep in a post, I would say, 2012 world?
So you're saying, like, where did the establishment lose it?
No, the opposite of that. Where did the base itself, not the people in power, but who actually went out and went to these rallies,
boycotted?
Yeah. And for the longest time, it was about three things. It was about limited government, fiscal responsibility, and free markets. Those were the three items that the Tea Party was founded on, and that drove it into the national powerhouse that it was. Where, in your opinion, I have certain opinions about this, but where, in your opinion, do you think that misstep started to happen and devolve into?
I would say probably in the presidential primary, because we were told that.
Which one again?
In 2012.
Okay.
That was when, so like that Tea Party, that Tea Party group within the GOP, I think that's when it really started to fizzle out. Because you had a candidate like a Ron Paul, who was running in 2012, and actually he exemplified a great deal of that Tea Party sentiment, much like his son did, back when he won his seat for U.S. Senate in Kentucky. Mm-hmm. But the problem is that the folks within the greater Tea Party movement were told time and again, like, we have to get this candidate who is electable by the population at large. Like, we need to have a candidate who is going to, you know, be that front, that shining face on the front of all the bumper stickers, and people can say, like, oh yeah, I can vote for him, and he's not going to be scary on these very hot button issues. He'll be Republican enough, and he could win some votes over. And I think the folks within the Tea Party movement were like, yeah, you know what? They kind of have a point. Like, we gotta stick together and vote together to get this guy in to take out Obama. And then what happens is you put up another squishy Republican, and people kind of bought into that message for a while. And then they were like, okay, well, you know what? Here, we lost the election in 2012, 2014. We'll do this thing again where we'll elect more and more Republicans. And, you know, once we take over in 2014, that's going to be the moment. And then, like we said before, as soon as 2014 happened and we had the House, we're like, well, not really. Like, we have to wait until we win the presidency. And I think right there, everybody's like, you know what? You're a bunch of liars. Like, you keep on telling us to vote for you, and you're going to do this, and you're going to do that. You're going to stick to principle. You're actually going to support constitutional government. We're going to support limited government, federalism. And you're just a bunch of crooks. You're a bunch of liars. Let's go ahead and get this one person who's going to go in like a bull in a china shop and completely destroy the thing from the top down. And who they go to? Donald freaking Trump. And that, I mean, for all of his sins and all of his flaws, at least one thing that Trump has done that is good is he has done exactly that. He has gone into the bigger, larger GOP and just Washington establishment, and he has completely destroyed everything in his path. And I think a lot of people within both the GOP and the DNC look at this and they're like, oh my God, look at all of these, you know, completely, essentially we give them some like higher being level of respect. Like, he's completely destroying the credibility of his institutions. He's, you know, hurting the FBI. He's hurting the value of the White House serving kids cheeseburgers when they come to visit for their winning the national championship for football. Like, he's just completely discrediting everything. And like, the base are like, yeah, that's what we've wanted for the past 10 years, but nobody's listened to us. And when you did listen to us for the first couple of years or so, we supported you. And then you're like, no, not going to do that anymore. And we're like, well, you know what? We're going to have somebody to break it. And now he's breaking it. And this is what you get. So I would say 2014 was really that moment where people just got there. They're pissed off. And they decide to vote for the guy who's going to go in, drop a grenade, and just walk away.
So I would agree with that to an extent. I actually think it kind of started before the presidential cycle, when, in my opinion, and I would love for your take on this, but when they started mixing Basically diluting the core message of what the Tea Party was about, the free markets and limited government, and started mixing things like issues surrounding immigration and populism and even some social issues into that mix. And from my perspective, that's kind of where I saw that. Yes, it had an effect on the presidential election and then the midterms following that and then the presidential election following that. But in my opinion, that's where I really saw the big instance, which I guess it wasn't a singular moment, but where the culture in the Tea Party started to shift away from those core principles to more divisive and kind of negative issues that they decided to attach themselves with as well.
Yeah, I can see that. I guess I look at it from the perspective of what actually stopped people from buying the narrative. We want to kind of look at this from a case study standpoint, like from 2000 and I'll say 2007 through present day. Like we have, well, it's funny to say, but we technically have the most connected and air quote, very big air quotes, educated electorate that we've had in a while, because people can use social media. They can use the beauty of the internet to not only learn about every single candidate through their issues, but can also interact with other people who are fans or constituents of whatever the elected official, and try to not only have discourse with them, but to then find those like-minded people and start building these online communities to support candidates. I mean, heck, that's part of the reason 2012 Ron Paul was so successful, from obviously a libertarian standpoint, being successful in actually basically coming in second to Mitt Romney. That was huge. So I think they're being able to utilize something like the internet and build together that strong arm to promote these candidates that represent our ideals was the biggest, you know, the biggest weapon that the Tea Party had. But then they got to the point, they realized that all these candidates that they were supporting weren't doing what they said they're going to do. And that's when they collectively as this group said, well, fine then, like we're done. And I think I just looking at it, because I remember back in college, like Tea Party was alive and well, and it started to fizzle off in 2014 when you had folks like, you know, Chris Christie, who was saying he was a Tea Party Republican, and folks like Tom Cotton, you know, same kind of vein. And that's
Rubio
when
people like that.
Yeah, exactly. Like that's when things really, really started to go up the cliff. Fun fact, by the way, I actually went to CPAC the year of Marco Rubio. See how close they are, folks? It was Marco Rubio's response to the State of the Union. And it was the year that Marco Rubio, he had the water glass and he like leaned off stage.
Yes.
So at CPAC, he actually did a giveaway for a Marco Rubio water bottle that he would sign. And he signed it saying, "Stay thirsty for liberty," which I still have. And I laugh every single day because I'm like,
This is the least liar. Yeah. This is the least liberty.
I am so thirsty for liberty, Marco, and you left me completely, you know, completely starved. I didn't get any liberty.
Dehydrated. Yeah.
There we go. Exactly. I was, you know, in a desert looking for liberty, and then Marco Rubio was, and alas, no water.
Exactly. So before we kind of switch gears into Libertarian Party politics, I want to get your take on more modern republicanism. You mentioned Trump. Tell me from your perspective as a libertarian, because this is something that I think it's an evolving identity that a lot of small L libertarians face. Like, do I support him on these things? Do I, you know, resent him? And like, where is your position in the age of Trump on a lot of the things that he's doing?
Well, I think we got to do a Ben Shapiro here. We have to go good Trump, bad Trump.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think this is the biggest problem with Trump, is that people can't objectively judge him and grade him and analyze him, mm-hmm. because there's a group of folks on the left who anything Trump does, they hate him. He is quite literally every negative idea and personal experience that they've ever had personified in this one gross, just disgusting individual. That's one perspective. And then on the right, for the Trump base, he is, you know, this guy who's standing up for the little folk in America. He's going to make America great again. He's going to bring our jobs back, build that wall, and he's going to smash the establishment, drain the swamp, which is, he hasn't said in a while. And anything he does, and nothing he does is wrong. So you have that those two very forceful groups on either end. And then the middle, you kind of have this, you know, I don't like the style of Trump, but meh. And then the other side, you had the folks who were like, well, I don't like some of the policies, but I guess it could have been worse. And they look at some of his cabinet appointees like a John Bolton or a Mike Pompeo, and they're like, okay, I can take that. But as someone like, I, again, a small L libertarian, but I also find myself more in like the classically liberal, more of a federalist mindset of how I want to approach government. Trump is, I gave him a solid like B-, C-plus for a grade because – again, there's a lot of good stuff. Like, there are some really, really good things that Trump did, like appointing someone like Neil Gorsuch to the Supreme Court, who I think could be the most libertarian Supreme Court we've had ever. Going ahead and helping repeal the individual mandate for Obamacare, the tax break, that was huge. I mean, that was a really, you know, important act that he helped bring forward to help reduce taxes in America. That's you know, something that's to be lauded and we should praise and hopefully encourage him to do more of. But then conversely, I mean, we had basically a year wasted to promoting Trump care. You have his absolutely insane war on trade and thinking that he can win a trade war. Sorry, Donald, that's not how economics work. And then, I mean, this is kind of a hit or miss, but and I know some people are going to be like, yeah, and other people are like, no, but Kavanaugh is not exactly the best nominee that he could have promoted.
Right,
like,
yeah.
Amy Barrett was sitting right there, or someone like a Don Willette. Like, come on. Like, there are so many other candidates, and you had to appoint this wishy-washy, again, that wishy-washy type of character in a Judge Kavanaugh. So there's that. But then I think the overlying thing about Trump, again, it goes back to this, he just destroys. Like, Trump goes in and Trump smashes, and he exposes the absolute scum of people who compose the narrative portions of our media. Now, I'm saying that to make sure it's clear. It's not everybody in media by any stretch of the imagination, but there is a strong group of people within the media who have a narrative, and it is their goal to present, air quotes, the facts that will promote a truth, a narrative that they are trying to bring forward without telling the whole story, just for the main goal of misleading the public, which is absolutely disgusting. Because if you want to support a fourth branch of government, which is supposed to be the media to keep the other branches honest, then the branch itself has to be honest. And a part of this checks and balances, which Trump is doing from the White House, is exposing right now that this fourth branch of government, the supposedly objective media, is hardly objective. I mean, folks like Brian Stelter, who have the audacity to sit on CNN on a show called Reliable Sources and knowingly omit the truth or specific facts to a discussion that he's having because it doesn't go with the narrative, like, that's absolutely revolting. If you guys want to have a good laugh, go on Twitter and follow Stephen Miller, not Trump's Stephen Miller, but Stephen Miller from, I believe, Red State or whatever conservative website. He's a Fox News contributor. I think you can follow him at Red Stees. And he has made it like his main mission to call out the hypocrisy in media. And I love it because he will take screenshots of journalist tweets and like from the exact same situations, but one's under Obama and one's under Trump. And just to show the verbiage that's used and the manner which they present, present an argument or present a situation as it supposedly happened, and how under Obama, there's nothing negative tied to Obama in any shape or form. But under Trump, anything and everything should have a possible connection to Trump. Like, we got to find where could that connection be? Instead of what they, you know, with Obama just saying, oh, there might be a little tiny stuff, but that's nothing. And just to see Trump exposing all of this because of him being the bombastic whatever you want to call him, the president that he is, who has that group of people that just look at him and can't control their emotions when they're talking about him. And I just think that right there, I think if we can compose Trump's first 2.5-ish years of his presidency, like, I think that has been the biggest and the best thing that has come out of his administration, is exposing the folks in power, especially in the media, who are snakes. They are manipulative, and they are purposely lying to the American public under the guise of being objective and the quote unquote defenders of truth.
Mm-hmm. So we spent a better part of almost 40, half hour or so, talking about the GOP and how different they have become over the years. And really it's nothing to be surprised about, but in actuality, you know, for a lot of people, especially our age, you know, this is quite a telling story. Let's shift gears just a little bit, and then after that, I sort of want to bring it back to where we started this conversation at. You and I both have very strong opinions about the state of the Libertarian Party. I actually have a bit of a roller coaster of opinions over the past, say, two to three years. Because I think there has been a lot of change internally that has been occurring within the Libertarian Party, and I'd love to sort of have that conversation with you about. But give me your overall reactions. Of course, you say you're a small L libertarian. And what is it that might be keeping you from being that big L, you know, bandwagon? Let's go get a third party elected, because the one thing that I, for all the faults of the Libertarian Party, the one thing that I always go back to as the absolute benefit of having the Libertarian Party in the spotlight is that it breaks the two-party system. It gives people another option that they didn't have before, they didn't think that they had before, and it sort of breaks up that narrative that if you're just voting for somebody other than the two parties, then you're just throwing your vote away and all that stuff that just drives me insane. So just give me some of your initial thoughts, and then we'll sort of have that a little bit of that discussion about the direction of the Libertarian Party.
Well, I've said this a couple of times on my show, and I think this has become the real reason why I cannot, at this moment, I say that now, at this moment, I cannot identify as a big L libertarian, because the Libertarian Party, nobody's going to take them seriously until they take themselves seriously. And I say that from a leadership's perspective, but also from a member's perspective. Starting with leadership, I'm sorry, when you have a chairman who will actively go out of his way to troll people within the greater libertarian movement, but also folks outside of the movement, that's not becoming number one of a chairman of the third largest political party in the United States. But secondly, that's no way, shape, or form to grow the Libertarian Party. As the chairman of the party, his job is to, number one, help grow the party, but number two, help us win elections. I haven't seen the chairman really go out of his way to help other candidates within the greater Libertarian Party to win. I think the focus of the Libertarian Party on these national elections is entirely misguided. The Libertarian Party is never going to win a national election until they start to win smaller local elections. I think they need to have a much more thoughtful process in helping support serious candidates on a local level, especially when you're trying to win, so for example, a school board or a town council seat, because those seats are actually seats that matter, because those are going to have a much more direct impact on impacting the communities that they serve. And it will give an example to say, see this over here? Look at town Sunnydale. Look how great that town has done since we've had three libertarians elected and they were able to help change the voting on the town council. Like, we've had poverty go down, and like, to use that as a case study and say, this works, and let's take that and bring it to the state capitol and actually make libertarians relevant. That's going to be one. And then from an activist standpoint, the Libertarian Party, and this kind of goes to the Libertarian, the larger Libertarian movement, it's much too focused on proving who's more real libertarian, who's the true libertarian, than they are in trying to bring people into the movement. Anytime someone with a non-libertarian view expresses said non-libertarian view, the almost immediate reaction is you're a statist, you're a socialist, you know, go back to Cuba, go back to wherever these socialists come from. And it's like, well, that's great, because they were actually, you know, 70% our ally, and now they're gonna be like, those nut jobs, absolutely not. I'm never going to align myself with them ever. So the libertarian movement and the libertarian leadership need to have this reckoning of people outside of our movement, outside of our little echo chamber and little bubble of libertarian ideals. They don't take us seriously right now. They haven't for a while. And even though 2016 was the perfect opportunity for the Libertarian Party to stand up to both parties and say, all right, here's the grown-up in the room. We're going to have a candidate who is sticking to principles, who actually believes what they're saying instead of just saying what's going to be the most popular or what's going to get them the most money after they leave office. We have a candidate who's coming up saying what they truly believe. And hey, guess what? It's a message that a lot of people will feel like, oh yeah, that makes sense. Like, don't hurt people. Don't take people's stuff. What a great message. And then we have a candidate who can't even convey what it means to be a libertarian, speaking to the nation as a libertarian, saying we're socially liberal and fiscally conservative. Like, no, Gary, that's not what it means to be a libertarian. But you've said that, and now you completely shut off people who maybe were socially conservative and people who were fiscally liberal. Like, just say no, that we believe the non-aggression principle. We believe in not hurting other people, not taking their stuff. We believe in free markets. Like, actually talk about what our principles are. But then you have Gary, you know, do the whole sticking his tongue out thing and going, nah, nah, nah. It's like, oh, great. That looks really great. And then the whole thing with what is Aleppo? I don't fault Gary. That was completely constructed by the media.
Yeah, yeah.
So I give Gary a pass there. But Gary,
I thought that was the biggest overreaction. Like, out of everything in 2016 that was the LP's fault, that was not one of them. I did not think. I thought that was, like, if you would have asked me that in 2016, I wouldn't have had a very good answer. I probably would have said the same thing. But because they asked that, now the whole world knows what it is. Yep. So yeah, I have had a bit of a journey when it comes to the Libertarian Party. I agree with pretty much everything you just said, especially with regard to 2016. I thought 2016 was a botched opportunity. My problem with Gary Johnson wasn't necessarily as much with Gary Johnson, because I thought he was a good person, a likable person.
Gary's a great guy.
Yeah,
he's just not a good candidate.
No, he's not a good candidate, and more importantly, he just had to pick which I know he himself didn't pick, but it was his supported candidate for vice president in Bill Weld. That was honestly who turned me off from the LP ticket more than Gary did. I could have like, you know, pulled my britches up and been like, okay, let's do this for Gary. If say like Larry Sharp was his VP, but the fact that Bill Weld was just completely offsetting, and I did not trust Bill. I did not trust Bill to give Gary the right advice.
You were smart to trust Bill.
yeah. So that was my biggest problem with 2016. However, I will say, I do think that the Libertarian Party has learned a lot since 2016. And I think the 2018 National Convention sort of proves that by, first of all, canning their vice chair. I can't even remember his name.
Arvin.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And putting in a really great guy. I just had him on my program. I'm really blanking on names. Perhaps
Alex Merced.
Yes. Alex. I had him on my program shortly after
he won. Nice guys finish free.
Yeah, he's very great, and I think right in line with the kind of vision that the libertarians should be leading. I think their social media campaign has cleaned up a lot in 2018. Whether or not they
really
stick
quick,
with that,
shout out to Jess Mears. Jess Mears has been phenomenal in changing the marketing from LP National.
Yes,
it's been
yes.
Her baby. Is yes. going in fixing that.
I have, like, from a very, like, purely objective standpoint, with these same criticisms that you have had, you know, I was one of the most critical, you know, I did not want to support the two parties just because they were the only two options, and I didn't want the Libertarian Party to be the party for me just because, well, they're the other guys. So, you know, I didn't want that. I wanted somebody who I wanted to actually believe in, and a party that I actually wanted to believe in. And I think 2018 Libertarian Party has become a lot closer, not quite there yet, but a lot closer and moving in the correct direction than anything that came out of 2016. There were actual candidates in 2018 that I would have happily had voted for, and some that I did vote for in this past election compared to 2018. So it's a very mixed bag. I think you ask anybody who is sort of into libertarian politics will kind of tell you a similar variation of what both you and I have just said. It's very mixed, and it's like, I really want to support them. I really do. I really love the idea of having more voices on the stage, but I also don't want more voices to be on the stage just for the sake of it. I actually want them to be the battle of ideas, not just a third person on the stage, you know, babbling about God knows what. So it's an interesting balance, because we don't want to be laughed off the stage before we even get there, but we also, I think that we also have to look at our victories just as small as we want to approach them, because you were talking about, you know, local offices and things, and I completely agree with that. But also, I agree that some of their recent changes, obviously, their chairs is still the same person. Could be better, obviously. However, given the options that we had, I hate to say this, but he was probably the best option for chairman out of the, if you were following the 2018 convention. But with a new vice chair and a sort of restructuring of internal politics of everything underneath him, and things like the advent of the Mises Caucus and things like that, that makes me a lot more optimistic than what I was, say, even a year ago.
I'm just worried still that they're not taking themselves as seriously as they should. How do I say this delicately? There are a lot of people within the libertarian movement who their role should be relegated to behind the scenes, to, you know, if let's say, for example, a lot of people who are policy wonks or who are, you know, they're A-plus students in the class of libertarianism 101. They can go ahead and, you know, read off every single Murray Rothbard quote and give you every single economic, you know, economic theory presented by Henry Hazlitt or what have you. Like, at the end of the day, those folks, that's their skill set. And we have to understand our role in the movement. If your role is someone like that, then be that person. Don't try to be the salesperson. And I say that not to discredit anybody, but the reality is there are people who are better, for example, Larry Sharp, at promoting the message, because that's the type of person they are. I mean, Larry, to have Larry as the best libertarian advocate I've seen quite honestly in a while. I mean, Larry was on Glenn Beck twice. He was on Joe Rogan. He was on Dave Rubin. And he was able to promote the ideas of libertarianism to people far beyond his campaign in New York State for governor. But all across the nation, there are people who are listening to the Joe Rogan podcast, listening to Larry Sharp, and they're like, huh. You know what? Maybe. Or they're listening to Dave Rubin, or they're listening to him on Glenn Beck, and they're actually giving libertarianism a chance because they see someone like Larry as the messenger. There are people in the libertarian movement who should not be those types of messengers because it's just not their skill set. So there's no individual person I want to call out by any stretch of the imagination, but if you find yourself maybe leaning towards like, you know, maybe I am that other person, it's nothing negative. Just stay in that role. Help us build the arguments. Help us better understand what we're conveying and help the salespeople. Help us be the best we can be. I mean, just to give you an example, for We Are Libertarians, for the big show, we have a complete like SWAT team of researchers behind the scenes who help build up the research for every single episode. So when we go into an episode and we're talking about, let's say, the surveillance state, we now have a treasure trove of examples we can bring out and arguments we can utilize to better convey the argument for a libertarian perspective to surveillance to people by and large that they can then say in their own lives, like, oh, that makes sense. Now I can talk about it to people instead of trying to go back and learn, you know, books and books and books of libertarian thinkers and writers to try to regurgitate what they said. So I think once the Libertarian Party is able to have enough self-awareness to understand that they need to take themselves seriously so other people will take themselves seriously, part of that requires, again, that self-awareness to put those people at the front. So more people like Larry Sharp and, you know, what happened with Austin when he left the party, like that was very upsetting because Austin was one of those better faces. Helping people like Jason Stapleton or Tom Woods or Dave Smith or heck, the We Are Libertarians Network or us, for example, to better reach people. That's the best thing that we can do. Change these hearts and minds and do it through an approach that's not, you know, the boring stuff in an encyclopedia. It's the stuff that people can relate to, the things that I know the quote is facts don't care about your feelings, but the reality is people have feelings and we need to acknowledge that and use our messaging to touch those emotions and to show them, hey, I get what you're feeling and I understand it sucks. Here's what we can do to fix that next time. And the way we're going to fix it is to promote ideas and get government out of your life. And that's what we have to do. I guess that's the by and large approach of what I think needs to happen for not only just the Libertarian Party, but the Libertarian movement. If that's what we want to do, bring people into our movement, actually make substantive changes, not only in growing the party, but actually winning elections and changing policy to make people freer, that's what we got to do.
Let's, as we start to wind down here, let's start to turn back a little bit from where we started in the beginning. So I want to have a bit of a lightning round. So, you know, we're not necessarily limited on time, even though I think you are a little bit.
Dinner
but,
time.
Yeah. But I do want to have this kind of a flowing. I'm not going to have too much follow up here. But with that being said, you can sort of elaborate as much as you want, keeping that in mind. So. Okay. First thing that I want to discuss real quick, what is it that, a guest or what episode have you had on your show, and this is always a fun one that I like to ask fellow podcasters, but what guest or episode that you've had on your show that has really made you challenge the way that you think, perhaps more than any of the other ones?
It's going to be the episode I had back with, Keith Rubino. So Keith, and I'll peek behind the curtain for my show. Keith's coming back on my show. He was a Democratic Socialist who was running for New York State Assembly. And I'm not sure if it really challenged me, but it was the challenging of each other. Because he was a Bernie bro. And, you know, he actually helped lead, I think, the Northeast for Bernie's campaign in 2016. So, I mean, he was all in for Bernie. And there was one point in the show where we were discussing the role of government waste. And he's like, well, yeah, that's the thing. That's why we got to put better people in the position to make sure we don't waste anymore. And I was like, but isn't that a fundamental flaw of the system? Because as soon as people go into it again that aren't in that mindset, it's going to go back to wasting. And he's like, I didn't really think about it like that. And I was like, that. Right there, boom, like that is, if I could take one section of my entire show and say, what is the purpose of this show? It's to make people look at things in a different way to help really, end of the day, educate, enlighten, inform. Educate them. Listen to what, you know, is going on in the world, and here's how it pertains to you in a libertarian or a free market approach. Enlighten people who are listening to the show who aren't libertarians to be like having that light bulb moment, being like, oh my God, I get it now. That's huge. Inform. I want people to come to the show with a question and walk away feeling that that question was answered. If you come to my show and you're trying to learn about the opioid epidemic and what is a libertarian response to that, I want you to leave the episode feeling like you have three bullet points that reflect exactly what the episode was discussing. And now you can go talk to people because you're informed and give them a libertarian perspective. So that's my short answer. I know it was longer than it's supposed to be, but that's the answer.
What issue do you think that is really what drives you and what makes you truly passionate about these ideas? And before you answer, don't just say like liberty, because that's kind of a broad answer to that question. And I guess most people on this program that I would bring on would have to say that. If that were the case, but more specifically, what's the one that made you, I guess, kind of click, that made these ideas really make sense, and then what drives you to find those right answers and to seek to communicate these ideas to other people?
You're gonna hate me, but it is liberty. But let me explain very quickly, because the reason I say liberty is because liberty literally is at the fundamental root of every single problem we have. You can look at the question and say, what was someone allowed to live their life freely? If the answer is no, then that's the problem. So whether it's, you know, was I able to decide whether I was going to give my money to the government for my taxes? No. Boom. There's an infringement on liberty. Was I given permission to buy health insurance from a state outside of my own state? Oh no. Boom. That's a point against liberty. So looking at the fundamental root of every single issue as truly it's a question of liberty, that's what it was. There's an aha moment after I listened to, I forget the speech it was, but Rand Paul gave a speech, and he was, oh, you know what it was? It was discussing the idea of universal healthcare with Bernie Sanders during a Senate speech. And he gave a speech about why it would be slavery to enact universal healthcare for doctors. And like I knew I was a libertarian up to that point, but then that was the moment I was like, boom, like it all comes down to whether a choice or not. Like end of the day, like we want to help people not get sick and we have universal healthcare. But what happens like if we don't pay those doctors, they would have to do it. Like they have to serve these people whether they want to or not. And they don't have a choice. Like that's that person's life. That's so important. And not to have that choice, that was like the moment it all clicked for me. So I know you didn't want the answer liberty, but hey, it's liberty.
Would you, I know I said I wouldn't be doing any follow-ups, but I guess you sort of forced my hand here. So to get just a little bit more specific, would you argue that the economics, the social issues, or the foreign policy are the things that really drives the world, and it makes things, if you don't have this one issue, then you can't help to understand the rest.
To quote my last guest in my show, Johnny Adams from Johnny Rocket, he said, economics is the key to understanding libertarianism. And I think at the end of the day, economics is definitely the primary example, because economic freedom allows you to live a more socially free life. Economic freedom allows the world to be a more free and peaceful world because of free trade and mutual and voluntary exchanges. So I think at the end of the day, it all comes down to economics. And yeah, that's where I'd base my answer.
Good answer, because I agree with that. And real quick before we hop off here, tell me what it is that was the book that perhaps inspired you the most or influenced you the most in the way of your current thinking.
It was a book written by the great Matt Kibbe, and it's also the namesake of my bumper sticker giveaway I was doing back a couple months ago. Don't hurt people, don't take their stuff. It was actually, his book was Don't Hurt People and Don't Take People's Stuff, A Libertarian Manifesto. That book essentially encapsulates what it means to be a libertarian, and it breaks it down to the most fundamental, easy to understand analogy. And it's a statement of fact. Don't hurt people. Don't take people's stuff. Like, that's it. If you can say that to a 3-year-old and they get it, then that's a heck of a philosophy. You should be able to convince your 3-year-old with that. And that's exactly what you can do. So yeah, Matt Kibbe's book, Don't Hurt People and Don't Take Don't Take People's Stuff, A Libertarian Manifesto.
Well, that's a great one. Big fans of Kibbe and all the work he does over at Free the People. Mm-hmm. Brian, thank you very much for coming on this program. We are really pushing it as far as the acceptable amount of time that we can spend on a program, but I think it's all worthwhile. I didn't use any notes whatsoever, so I think, as Dave Rubin says, that's the mark of a good interview. So
agreed.
Yes. So thank you for coming on this program. I appreciate it. Please give people an idea of where to find you on social media and where to find your podcast at.
Absolutely. So folks, if you're interested in the Brian Nichols Show, you can go ahead and find it at briannicholsshow.com or just Google search the Brian Nichols Show. We're available wherever podcasts are available. If you want to find me on social media, it's at B Nichols Liberty, both on Twitter and on Facebook. And if you listen to the Brian Nichols Show and you like what you hear, please give me a subscribe, downloads, a rate and review. That definitely helps. And spread the message. You know, share it online with a member of your family or friends. Share an episode. Be like, hey, I think this is interesting. And if you also, you know, want to help contribute, if you enjoy what I promote every single week, my Patreon's always available, also at B Nichols Liberty. Or you can make a one-time PayPal donation. It's thebriannicholsshow@gmail.com. And if you guys want to ever send me an email, please feel free to email me. It's brian@briannicholsshow.com. But Caleb, thank you so much, man, for having me on. I really enjoyed being on your show today. And I'm definitely looking forward to doing this sometime in the future as well.
Definitely. And listen to that very clean and crisp send off and giving out all those all of those social media tags and everything.
It's like I do this myself all
the time.
It's
almost like you almost have your own podcast. It's amazing.
How about that?
Brian, thanks again, and we'll be sure to have you on soon. For everyone listening, please be sure to follow me at Caleb Franz. Be sure to follow the show at MeLiberty. Be sure to follow the MeLiberty Initiative at MeLiberty.org, all on Twitter. On Facebook at the MeLiberty Initiative, check out our website at MeLiberty.com, and then be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes so that you will never miss an episode or an update. And until next week, we will see you.